This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. Carlos Cagina is our technical producer, and Ryan White is the live stream producer. Please check out my YouTube and Rumble channels, Strange Planet. All right, well, talking about planets, we are about to delve into some wonderful mysteries, secrets, and cover-ups on this planet and beyond, including the Moon, Mars, and even our very own Sun. These are all images captured on satellite that don't really fit with the official narrative. The new book from Mary Joyce is called Spy in the Sky, Secrets and Cover-ups on Earth and Beyond. Just got my copy from Mary in the mail recently, and it's just filled with some incredible images, and we're going to discuss some of these satellite images and put them up on the live stream as well as we're discussing them. And Mary's a good friend of the program. She's worked for two major metropolitan newspapers, the Orlando Sentinel in Florida as an artist and a columnist, and the Oakland Press in Michigan as a Sunday magazine editor and then a feature editor. On the side, she's written magazine articles and books, and since 2008, she's been the main researcher and editor for a fabulous website called SkyshipsOverCashiers.com. SkyshipsOverCashiers.com, and the website features a wide variety of cutting-edge topics from UFOs to secret underground bases, from Bigfoot to Cherokee little people. She is the author of the aforementioned Spy in the Sky, also underground military bases hidden in North Carolina mountains. Cherokee little people were real. Tangible evidence of Jesus left behind for us. And Bigfoot, Beyond the Footprints. Mary, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Fine. It's always good to see you, and I enjoy talking to you.
Likewise. Well, congratulations on Spy in the Sky. And we have talked in the past many times, actually, about how you use, for example, Google Earth and others to spot artifacts that appear to be, to have some intelligence behind them, not natural formations, but artificial type artifacts found on the ocean floor or on other planets. But now you've collected them and put them all in one book, and it's again called Spy in the Sky, Secrets and Cover-ups on Earth and Beyond. Let's begin by explaining, I mentioned Google Earth, but what other, where else are you getting your images?
Many different ways, mostly with Google Earth. And I really want to emphasize that anybody in your audience can use this as a tool. Now, it takes a lot of patience because I've cruised Mars, I've cruised Antarctica, I've cruised the ocean, I've cruised many places. You don't find things right away. This has been over years that I have found these things, and I haven't found these anywhere else on the internet. So I'm dealing with some really fresh images that will be new to most people. The most different source that I have comes from a man who was from the Netherlands, and he contacted me back in 2013 And he was taking NASA SOHO satellite images. A SOHO satellite monitors the sun every 15 minutes. It takes a picture, constantly monitors it. He would take those NASA photos, which any of us can find on the internet, and then he would blow them up and clean up the debris and the interference. And it's astounding what he would find, something that might look like a comet streaking across the sky near the sun, proved to be something that looked like a giant extension rod with an intricate metal parts to it. And these things are not like the saucers that we see in photograph near the Earth. We have two of them that he found we call them hotels. And one is the Phoenix Hotel, because it looks a little bit like a phoenix with wings. Another one was, we called it the Isis Hotel. Again, a similar kind of structure. But you zoom in and you see structure. You see metal. You see intricacies like I've never seen with any UFOs before. Those are wonderful. There's a bit of a mystery with him because we were in touch from 2013 to 2015, and then it's like he dropped off the earth. His YouTube channel ceased to be updated. I couldn't reach him no matter what. And I don't know if he just got tired of doing it, which doesn't sound likely, if he got sick, if he died, or if he was pressured to quit doing this, because NASA on some of their sites will deny that any of these things could possibly be real.
This is Mart Padmos.
That's right.
Gentleman that you're referring to. And
he wanted the world to see these. So whatever's happened to him, I feel like I'm carrying on his mission by including those photos in the book. And they're remarkable. All of them, absolutely all of them, are bigger than Jupiter. Some have a bigger diameter than the sun itself.
Right. You mentioned, and we'll put these, I'll have my live stream producer insert these up on the screen. We won't see them now as we're talking, Mary, but they will be up there for people to see when this goes to air. So you mentioned this image or this artifact that appeared between the NASA's SOHO. What does that stand for, SOHO? What is the...
Goodness, I don't know if I can remember. It's one of those acronyms, and I'm really bad at those.
Okay, but I've got it here.
It is a satellite that's always monitoring the sun.
Right. And, I'm just seeing if I can
It's like solar heliotropic satellite. I really don't
remember. There it is, Solar and Heliospheric Observatory.
My books are smarter than I am.
No, that's all right. These are... Solar and Heliospheric Observatory. So you mentioned this image that appeared between SOHO and the sun, and it's immense because, keep in mind that the sun is...
round figures, it's like 860,000 miles across or in diameter.
Right.
And when you have things near the sun that are bigger than that, we are talking humongous, absolutely humongous.
Right. And so this image that appeared, or this artifact that appeared, it looks like a Thunderbird or a Phoenix. I saw the image that you sent me, to me, I thought of Thunderbird, these mythical huge winged creatures, but a Phoenix is another example. So Ryan will put that up there. So this was captured by SOHO.
NASA camera caught all these. The problem is there's a lot of debris and interference, and this man had the technical expertise and computer expertise to clean up that interference and to clean up the debris so you could see the detail.
Right, it's up on the screen now. And then in the book, you've zoomed in, or Matt Mark Padmos zoomed in, and then he sent you the photo. And as you say, you can see the this is clearly it's not organic. I mean, there are right angles on this, and it appears to be, metallic in some way.
I've tried to find words to describe it, and I don't know why this image comes to mind. But if you ever look at a silver saxophone, you see all those buttons, and you see the shiny metal and intricate keys. There's that kind of intricacy in some of the images.
Right. So can anyone access the NASA SOHO?
Yes. Yes.
Just on your computer?
Uh-huh.
Wow. And it updates, it takes a photograph of the
sun? Taking a photo every 15 minutes. I will check in on it every once in a while, and every once in a while I'll get lucky and I'll see one of these things. Sometimes, you know, people will dismiss them. It'll just look like a distant shooting star going across in front of the camera. But when you zoom in on those, they're not shooting stars. They're not comets. They're something that's been made by intelligent beings.
So, yeah, if this was a satellite or something that was orbiting the sun, I mean, it should show up in regular intervals. I mean, that would be a huge task, you know, because for something to orbit the sun, depending on how long it took, I don't know, but it would be interesting to see if this flying, what did he call it, the Flying Phoenix Hotel, whether that showed up again. So do you also monitor the SOHO Observer?
Not with regularity, but I will take time every once in a while. And what you can do once you get into that site, you can skim through all the ones that have been taken for the last 24 hours. And so you just skim down, and if something jumps out, then I slow down and take a good look at it. You can look for days and never find anything, and then you can find a bunch of fantastic things.
And it's curious that NASA wouldn't take these down.
Sometimes they do.
Yeah.
But see, it's a live feed, and if you're right there watching live feed, you have a good chance of catching it. Every computer keyboard has a key that you can press that will capture whatever image is on your screen. And I encourage people to learn where it is on their keyboard if they don't already know, because some of these things you may never see again.
Right. So getting back to Google Earth, because you can only use that on the Earth, or can you use Google Earth and does it turn around and also
take a look at the moon? Up at the top of the page, you'll see, I think it's an image of Mars. And you have a choice of Mars, the moon, or Earth that Google Pro will take you to.
Right. So
click the one you want.
Okay. So with Google Earth, and when you're looking at the Earth, you're primarily looking at the oceans on the ocean floor?
No. Antarctica has been a major focus that's included in the book. Beneath the ocean is another focus. So those are just things that I haven't seen anywhere else before that I have been trying to get out and show people how, you know, what's out there to really see.
So do you have any tips, hacks, as we call them now, I guess, in order to help people if they want to participate and do what you're doing? Because, you know, the more eyeballs, the better, obviously. How do you approach this? I mean, you must do it systematically. In other words, you have to have a game plan. Otherwise, you can spend hours.
I'll give you the game plan. Like on Mars, the latest thing I've been doing is I found out where water is most likely on the planet. There's another acronym. It's SWIM, SWIM. Don't ask me what the letters stand for, but they're looking for water and ice just beneath the surface of Mars. Water is essential for life. So I figured that would be a really potent area to begin doing searching. So sometimes I'll start out with a plan like that. Sometimes I'll just zero in on someplace and just start cruising. And sometimes I get lucky. You don't instantly find these things unless you're really lucky. And there's sometimes a great deal of time between some of the things I have in the book. For example, I think it was in 2011, I was cruising the northern hemisphere of Mars and found what looks to be like a habitat or a self-contained living space that where a human being or human beings could live. It was 5 years later, when I was doing a similar cruise in the southern hemisphere, that I found another one. The first one was 700 feet in length. And even though the image is kind of blurry, you can tell it is not something that is part of a natural topography of a planet. I don't care which planet you pick. And then the one that was found in the southern hemisphere 5 years later is 7,000 feet in length. I assume the smaller one was built first.
I'm just looking through the series of images you sent me. There's one on page one of the images that you sent me. There's the photo.
You're the only one that has a copy of that, so I can't even have a reference.
Okay, but well, it looks to be like it's on the red planet. That it's very red and sandy, and then it looks like a garage door, an open garage
door. Oh, now that was an interesting experiment. Normally, when I cruise a planet or I go from east to west or west to east, this time I tipped the planet and started doing the same search going from north to south. If I hadn't done that, I would never have discovered 27 entrances all in a line going into the interior of Mars. And they're all set very, very similar in structure. They're all in a line spread out over 16 miles. And they range in width from 400, round figures, from 400 feet to 1,000 feet.
Across.
The horizon, yes, across. And they look like warehouse entrances, or, you know, I don't know how else to describe them.
Yeah.
And that's big, you know, 1,000 feet across. Anything we can fathom can fly into that. Anything we have that's man-made on this planet can fly into one of the smaller entrances, which is 400 feet.
And there are 27 of them from the South Pole of Mars to the North Pole.
It's going north. And I'm not saying it's spread out that whole way, but it is on a north-south axis. It's spread out over 16 miles, and there's 27 of these entrances.
Wow.
That blew my mind. And that is a way of confirming what Haim al-Rashid said back in December of 2020. Now, he was the head of Israeli space security for nearly 30 years. Wonderful credentials. He'd won many awards. Just incredible credentials. And in the Jerusalem Post in 2020, in December, he went public about a number of things. And I hope, let's see, maybe I can find that page, because there's some quotes that are there that should be shared with your audience.
Page 8. It's page 8. Professor Haim al-Rashid, again, head of Israel's security space program from 1981 to 2010. Also a three-time recipient of the Israeli Security Award. So this guy has credentials, to say
right.
the least.
And keep that page open, since you can access that quicker than I can. I've highlighted two sentences there. Read that to your audience. It's entirely a quote from him, but those that are highlighted are important.
All right, this is his statement, Professor Haim al-Rashid's statement, as published in the Jerusalem Post article. And that was from December 8th, 2020. Quote, the UFOs have asked not to publish that they are here. Humanity is not ready yet. Trump was on the verge of revealing, but the aliens in the Galactic Federation are saying, wait, let people calm down first. They don't want to start mass hysteria. They want to first make us sane and understanding. And then he goes on to say, they have been waiting for humanity to evolve and reach a stage where we will generally understand what space and spaceships are. There is an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens. They signed a contract with us to do experiments here. They, too, are researching and trying to understand the whole fabric of the universe, and they want us as helpers. And he also writes, or says in this interview in the Jerusalem Post, there's an underground base in the depths of Mars, where their representatives are, and also our American astronauts.
And then I find those entrances all in a line. I go, isn't that interesting?
Between that
and those two habitats, that clearly shows to me that we have human beings on the planet right now. And why they maintain this other space program with outdated rocketry, it's almost like they're using that to distract the public from what's really going on.
Dog and pony
and
show.
That sounds like an expensive distraction, but clearly that must be what they're doing, because there's no way that they're blasting rockets to Mars to get this kind of operation going.
No, not using old-fashioned rocket fuel. And think about that. If that is in fact the case, that they have this dog and pony show, like window dressing to distract us, meanwhile, there's this secret space program and they're using, who knows what, anti-gravitics, what technology it would, you know, to get a base to Mars and establish a colony there. I mean, people are dying to this day in, you know, in horrible accidents. We had the shuttle disasters. All of that is unnecessary. So they have a lot to answer for, let's put it that way, when this is all said and done. Mary Joyce is with us, and she's a journalist, author, and the founder, creator of SkyShipsOverCashiers.com, and her brand new book, Spy in the Sky. And these are, many of them, Google Earth images. And on Google Earth, you can take images, or you can find images, not only on Earth, but also on the Moon and on Mars. And just another quick tip. You've pointed this out previously. When you're looking for something, when you find something, something remarkable, take a note of, you want to pin it and take a note of the coordinates, right?
That's correct. Right.
Because.
A lot of people don't know that they can print the screen, whatever's on your computer screen. There's a button to hit that, and that will save whatever you're seeing. And that's so important, because so many of these things that I have found, as soon as I post them on the website, they disappear, or they get blurred, or they get totally distorted. So if you find something important, please hold on to it.
How long do you have to look? Let's say you're looking in the Antarctic. How long do you have to look typically before you get a hit?
Okay. Once you get your first hit, then it becomes a little bit easier. I want to give full credit to a woman. Her name is Mary Hall, and she had a stroke at a very young age. She's probably about 50 now. And for a while she was bedridden, and she amused herself by using Google Earth and exploring things. About a year ago, in May of 2021, she started exploring Antarctica. She spent 4 months looking for something that might be interesting. And one day she found this, it looks like a black crack in the ice. And she went delving. You can go down, you can delve real deep with Google Earth. And she found the remains of an ancient city. Well, once I found that out, then I began to explore myself, and I realized how she had found that. So after 4 months of hard work from her, I was kind of given a jump start on how to find these images myself. Between the two of us, we ended up finding the ruins of 5 different ancient cities beneath the ice in Antarctica. The ice in Antarctica is melting really, really fast, so all sorts of stuff is being discovered. Now, here is something that I think is really important to emphasize. Most scientists agree that Antarctica's been covered with ice for 34 million years. So what's being uncovered now is the oldest thing we have ever heard of. People think the Great Pyramid's old. It's less than 5,000 years old. Compare 5,000 years to 34 million. I mean, the mind can't even comprehend it. So these are truly extraordinary things to discover.
And again, speaking to my live stream producer, Ryan, if you go to page 2 that I sent you, and it's the second image, and that is one of the ancient cities that appears to be emerging from Antarctica's ice. If you could put that up on the screen. And you write here, Mary, an ancient metropolis discovered emerging from Antarctic melting ice back on September 18th, 2021 by Mary Hall, who found it using Google Earth. A portion of that city shown above, and then you've increased the photo contrast so the city walls are instantly recognizable. And again, when you look at this image and you zoom in, you can see they can't be natural formations. They're right angles. There's an intelligence behind whatever created this.
Now, I only sent you the one image, which is a good one, and you either have it up or going to put it up. But on some of them, the cities spread out like cities do now today on Earth. There's one that looks like it's stretched out along a river. It's got that kind of an organic flow to it. So the cities then, like the cities now, will evolve somewhat organically.
And have you gone back to check to see whether these are still visible on Google Earth, or have they been blurred or erased somehow?
In the book, I show, I don't know what the state of them is right now. I haven't checked them in the last 2 or 3 weeks, but I have some in there where you can see where they have deliberately blurred them. And I will have the shot that I took a screenshot of, and I will have what they did often within a day of me posting it.
All right. I want to go back to the another image that you sent me that I want to put up on the screen here. And there's a sort of a wide shot of this, and it looks, it's very yellow. And then you zoom in, and it looks like some sort of a circular or a round disc, and almost like it landed and it slid along the surface and then came to rest. Do you know which one I'm referring
to? Yes, I do. And another thing you can do with Google Earth Pro is you can measure things, which, you know, in feet or yards or kilometers or whatever. And it's a circular shaped UFO that's about 400 feet in diameter. And you can see the skid mark. And I've measured the skid mark, and it's over 4,400 feet in length. And then you can see where this thing has like crashed into the soil of the planet.
I'm sorry, did you say Mars? This is resting.
Yes, Mars. That's Mars.
Wow. And what is that yellow band?
Almost looks like that was, and I can only guess on this, it looks like that image was caught when this was crashing in, because it looks like it was heat generated streak marks.
Right.
That's what it looks like to me. And it also has a white reflection off the back. The sun hits Mars also, so there are shadows and reflections, just like we have.
Remarkable. Remarkable. And again, you're able to mark the coordinates, even on the red planet, 81 degrees... 20 minutes, 51 seconds, or something like that, north, 91, 28, 38, 86 east. That's right.
And I should point this out. I'm trying to share this information with people. And everything I have found, I have tried to find the coordinates so that anybody can copy those coordinates and paste it into, or put it into the search bar for Google Earth, and you can find these sites for yourself. And that's a nice place to start. You can take one of those images, and then you can explore further from there.
Do you ever get any, I don't know, phone calls in the middle of the night, cryptic messages saying, what are you up to, Mary? What are you doing?
No. I've had some strange things happen, but not like that. And most of those things happened when I had when I first started the website and had a different computer. And I'll just quickly tell you one story. I was working on a UFO story for the website. I didn't finish it. The next morning I got up, went into my office, and was going to finish it. Couldn't find it. Well, what happened was all of my UFO files had disappeared, every single one of them. But everything else I had on my computer was there. I called in the guy who was the head of computer services for the university here close to me, and he came to my home and checked it out. He said he couldn't even find remnants of it in the bowels of the computer. He'd never seen anything like it. He didn't know how it was done. So that would probably be the most unusual thing that's happened to me.
White,
I don't know.
Clean.
I won't stir up anything with this book.
I am flipping here. Forgive me. I'm flipping through as we're talking because I'm trying to find this, and I'm listening intently, but I'm trying to find this another image that you sent me in the book. It almost looks like almost like a bullet hole, because the edges around this opening are very jagged. on the top. I don't know if
is it one of the few black and white pictures?
No, it's this is one of the two. I found it now on page 26. It's one of the two entrances. Now we're bouncing back to the Antarctic. Two entrances into Antarctica's interior. And
so we're just going to jump your audience all over the place today. Now we're back on Antarctica. I love it.
We are. Well, I'm just looking at the images that you sent me, and I'm kind of...
Well, that's a good one. That's a good one. And
what can you tell me about this entrance?
Well, there's a good story with that one, too, as far as cover-up goes. Found two entrances into Mars. One of them looks like it has a metal awning over it, and it's at an angle, so I can't get precise measurements of it.
Sorry, Antarctica. You said Mars. We're back on Antarctica.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Yes, Antarctica. I see the metal. I see the metal dome over the entrance.
Yeah, but it's at an angle, so you can't really measure the width of it. The other one, which on that page is right next to it, is a straight-on shot. And that one's 300 feet across and 100 feet high. Now, that's the one where there's been some really interesting activity. I posted those two together on the website, skyshipsovercashers.com. And immediately, I think it was the next day, but it was very, very shortly after posting that, it was like somebody picked up a bottle of black India ink and poured it all over it. You couldn't see the entrance at all. The next step was that these two entrances had been covered up, but they still had words on it. And it said Hollow Earth Entrance 1, Hollow Earth Entrance 2. All right. Then the next step of the cover-up was those disappeared. And finally, they turned the entire thing into a snowfield. And you couldn't even tell that there ever had been anything there. So I show the steps of the cover-up. And again, by pressing that screen button on my keyboard, I was able to save these things.
I'm just going to work through another image that you sent me so that Ryan can put this up on the screen. And this looks like it's, well, it's in the ocean, and it looks like it might be off the coast of California. And it's just... I can't really zoom in. Maybe I can find
it. Here, I can explain it. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I found a whole series of ancient structures beneath the surface of the Pacific, all the way from Alaska down to the Baja Peninsula. I think the one that you have was one that looks like an underwater airport.
Yes.
And it's in the ocean between... It's the Bay of California, I think. Yep. But it's east of Baja. It's between Baja and Mexico.
It's east of the Baja Peninsula. You're right.
And next to it, I also sent you a picture of the Spokane airport. And you can see how the runway that's down deep beneath the ocean and the runway in Spokane look incredibly similar. But here's the difference. The longest airport runway in the world is just slightly over 3 miles. That one that's under the ocean is, I think it's 89 miles long or 88, 89 miles in length. So we're talking humongous. Every structure I found along the west coast of California and Baja and Canada, they're huge, huge structures. So whatever intelligence created those, they probably were a totally different species because everything is so huge.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, it does. It looks like an airport. Any idea what the depth of the water is there?
No, I wish that I had done that. I did not do that in the book. I've got the length of the runway and where it's located and the coordinates, but no, I didn't get that answer.
And again, Ryan, if you could put up those images, this is... possible undersea airport east of Baja Peninsula, and then... Once you post that, post the image of the runway from the Spokane International Airport. And you're right. It looks pretty much the same. 89 miles.
Isn't that, you've got the page there. I think I'm within a mile of it. I know.
Yes. 89 miles long. And again, have you gone back to check the coordinates for this one to see if it's still there?
I'm going to have to do that. As you know, I wanted your audience to know that you're the one who gave me the impetus to do this book.
Ah,
And I had been collecting all this information. This idea kind of resided in the back of my head. And you and I had a conversation. And by the time you were done talking to me, I thought, I got to do that. So you get the credit for me getting off my butt and making this happen. And well, I want your audience to know
thank
that.
Thank you. That's very kind, Mary. I played a very, very small role. I simply reminded you of something.
Well, you kicked me in the butt. So, I mean, that was good.
You know what? Why don't we employ our listeners? Let's put them to work. Let me give them the coordinates and, you know, they can check these things out and see if it's still there. The again, we're talking about a possible undersea airport east of the Baja Peninsula. The coordinates on Google Earth are 26 degrees, 50 minutes, 31 seconds north. Again, 26 degrees, 50 minutes, 31 seconds north, 100 degrees, 37 minutes, 0 seconds west. I think I read those out correctly. That's the way you're supposed to.
But what you might want to do is to just show it on your screen. Show the coordinates on the screen, then people can more easily jot them down.
There you go.
They're confusing. Okay. Talking coordinates is like listening to Japanese.
Right. Okay. So I'll give Ryan, you put those coordinates up. 26, 50, 31 north, 110, 37, 00 west. He'll put those up. That's a great idea. And check it out and let us know. Has that image been obliterated or blurred? All right. This was a short segment. We'll come back and finish up with Mary Joyce. Again, the new book, Spy in the Sky, Secrets and Cover-Ups on Earth and Beyond. The website, skyshipsovercashiers.com. Back with more in a moment. Stay with us.
The owners of the system are asleep. Now we can play The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. Take a look around. What do you really see? This is where you can tell all about it. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio.
A final segment with Mary Joyce, journalist, author. Spy in the Sky is the latest. Other books include Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains, Cherokee Little People Were Real, Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us, and Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints. When putting this book together, Mary, what would you say was your biggest find, your favorite find from Google Earth?
From Google Earth. I think what's going on Mars is incredibly important. That is giving us a glimpse of our future. That is showing us what's currently going on. I tend to want to look forward rather than backward. And the discoveries on Mars, I think, are the most outstanding in my own opinion. But as far as archaeology goes, the things beneath the ocean and the things that are coming up from the Antarctic are pretty incredible too.
Right. I don't have these images to put up on the screen, but can you talk to me a little bit about these undersea pyramids in the Bahamas? Do you remember those on page?
Yeah, and there's a personal 56? Story that goes with that. I used to live on Cocoa Beach between Patrick Air Force Base and the Kennedy Space Center. And one day I was with a friend and we were having drinks at the pier and got into a conversation with a couple, and they were all excited. They were divers and they had been diving off of Vero Beach, Florida, and they had found a pyramid. And what happens is there is a sandy bottom to the Atlantic. And when there's storms, big storms, it will turn up the sand. And a lot of the treasure hunters will then fly in low planes to see if they can find treasures. And some of these pyramids become visible under those conditions. Well, I started using Google Earth in my great detective work here and found two pyramids south of Paradise Island in the Bahamas. And that's another cover-up story because I have the original images that I found. And then shortly after that, they went in and put new satellite strips. Well, one of the strips was really small, and it just happened to have been placed right where those pyramids are. So that's the kind of craziness that goes on with the cover-ups.
Remarkable. Remarkable. Let's see here. Alaska. Can we move up to the Alaskan coast here? Evidence of ancient civilizations off Alaska's coast. And you give a shout out to someone, Colin Andrews, for suggesting you explore a particular area off the southern coast of Alaska.
Now, Colin Andrews may be somebody that your listeners, or at least some of them, might be familiar with. He is known for his work with discovering and getting photos and analyzing crop circles. And so how he got down beneath the water of the ocean, I don't know, but he found something he found peculiar. And the first thing I found under his direction was like a square rectangle of horizontal lines, all parallel. And I think they're like 5 miles in length, and they're all parallel in a perfect box. Well, what's that doing on the bottom of the ocean? And then it's like you can see perhaps roads that connect that with something else. It gets rather intricate, and it is beyond describing with words other than what I just told you. Right. The rest of it's really confusing.
Amazing. I'm sorry. I'm standing here looking, or sitting here looking at these images. Evidence west of Gorda, another unusual pattern of equally spaced perpendicular lines on the ocean floor directly west of the town of Gorda, which is south of Big Sur State Park. And I mean, this is even more elaborate. These lines kind of crisscross a little bit, but again,
right. We have parallel lines in one direction and parallel lines in another direction. I think that whole formation is 28 miles in one direction and 25 miles in the other direction.
Yes.
It looks like some farmer's field, except the dimensions are so big. Some of the strips there that would be like rows of produce, let's say, or crop, I think are over a mile in width.
Yeah, 1.43 miles in width.
So we're not talking something small.
South of Long Beach, evidence of a third California coastal ruin about 46 miles south of the Malibu structure. Well, first of all, we should talk a little bit about the Malibu structure.
We talk about what gets me started on stuff. Back in 2014, somebody found this huge structure off of Malibu, and it's huge. The roof you can measure on Google Earth, and it's like 3 miles across, and it's sort of like, anyhow, it's flat. The side view, when you look at it, the roof is being held up by pillars. And when I found that out, I thought, that's probably not the only thing along the California coast. So I spent a great deal of time just cruising the coast up and down, and ended up finding things from Alaska down to Baja.
The Malibu structure, you do have a picture of it in the book. And you're right, when you see it on the side angle, you do see pillars, what appear to be pillars, holding up this massive...
Now, to make it even more interesting, that particular area is where people see a lot of UFOs. So there's two possibilities for the origin of these that I've come up with. One is it's some kind of alien civilization. Two, who knows, maybe it's a remnant from ancient Lemuria, which is also known as Pan or Mu, which was a civilization supposedly that sunk into the Pacific Ocean. Well, that has been dismissed as myth, but when you begin to find these structures along the West Coast, you go, it could be part of that.
Right.
So it's either very ancient or it's ET. And if somebody has another idea, I'd certainly love to hear it.
And our Preston Dennett has done a lot of research and work in terms of UFOs coming out of the submersibles. These are submersible UFOs coming out of that area. People will stand on the beach and just watch these strange lights in the sky coming up out from under the ocean around where this Malibu structure is. And I think we have time just to discuss one more, and it's like the Malibu structure, you write, the one near Isle Coronado is monstrous. It looks like a giant cockroach.
Those are your words. I hadn't thought of that one.
Yeah. It's
parallel and west of Coronado Island. And it looks like it has sloping... How do you say it? It's like a structure with sloping sides that go out. And it looks like maybe there's a portico that goes around it. And when you look down on it, straight down, those porticos, because it's at an angle, look like dots that are equally spaced going around the side of this. It is twice as long as the island of Coronado. It's that picture that I include in the book is 5 miles long.
I wonder if anyone is thinking about organizing some kind of a expedition to, I don't know, sending a submersible down there with a camera or something.
I think that'd be great.
All right. Well, that's just a sample of some of the remarkable images you're going to find in Spy in the Sky, Secrets and Cover-Ups on Earth and Beyond. And you can participate, too. Just go onto Google Earth and choose either the Earth or the Moon or the Mars. Make sure that you take screenshots. That's so important. And whatever you find, maybe send them to Mary.
Well, I think maybe you'd like them too. So
absolutely.
They can let either one of us know about it. And if somebody finds something really good, let's share it with people. That's why I did this book. It's like a mission. Hey, you guys, look at what's happening around here. And it's important. So if people find something, that's great. We'll run with it. Like I said, it was a gal in a confined to her bed who first got me started on finding the discoveries in Antarctica. I will give people credit. I'm not one of those who wants to hog the stage and say, hey, I'm the one who did this. So if you want an outlet for something you find, contact me at skyshipsovercashers.com.
All right. And in the meantime, Spy in the Sky, amazon.com.
That's correct.
Mary, always a real pleasure. Thank you so much. Fascinating work.
Thank you for your kick in the butt. You have a good evening.
You too. When we come back, Ali Siadatan will talk about the Great Reset, the WEF, and end times prophecy. Stay with us.
The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed basement with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Carlos Cagina is our technical producer, and Ryan White is the live stream producer. Please check out my YouTube and Rumble channels, Strange Planet. Don't forget to hit subscribe. All right, we're going to discuss the Great Reset, the goals and aspirations of the World Economic Forum under Klaus Schwab. We'll also talk about the headlong rush into a cashless society or a digital currency, and how all of these things sort of intersect and relate to biblical prophecy, end times prophecy, the ultimate or the final arrival of the 11th king. Ali Siadatan is a good friend of the program, and he's a documentary filmmaker, also the founder of Think Again Productions here in Canada, a multimedia teaching ministry, shedding light on mysteries and treasures of scriptural knowledge, which is making the Bible more real than ever. Ali has found that evidence keeps agreeing with the Bible's tale, from biblical cities peering through the sand to alien abductions and prophetic events. The website thinkagainproductions.com, and you can also screen his documentary, UFOs, Angels, and Gods. Ali, welcome once again.
Thank you for having me, Richard. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So let's look at a kind of a big picture. And when you see what's happening today, as I mentioned, we have this great reset everyone is talking about. We have the World Economic Forum really pushing for digital currency, digital IDs. Many of these are being adopted in at least in incremental stages. So, for example, in Israel, they've just passed a law banning cash purchases. I believe it's above $1,700.
Yes.
Norway now is they want to track basically how everyone spends their money.
Yes.
Sweden has introduced a carbon green, like a carbon emissions credit card. It's voluntary, but once you've spent X number, you know, your limit on anything that has to, that has a carbon footprint, like red meat or gasoline, your credit card basically forbids you from making any more purchases. So we're seeing the early foundations of all of these things coming to fruition, a digital currency and so forth.
Yeah, I think
you make of that.
This whole aspect of what you're describing, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. It's one of the sayings. This whole socialism, you know, the idea that you're describing, which is the state knows best, you know, through its science, through its, you know, it's a big daddy, it'll control everyone and lead everyone into nirvana. I would say the roots of this thing, as far as I'm concerned, come out of Bavaria. This particular picture you're painting, kind of continue, if you, where did this come from? It really came out of the events of Bavaria, the two Babylons of Hyssop, and this conspiracy that supposedly was stopped because lightning hit this guy as he was carrying the documents, but somehow it hasn't stopped. And from there, we saw it spread to the French Revolution, kind of socialism, and to the Bolshevik Revolution, you know, in Russia. And then in the West, it came through this London School of Economics teaches it. It's George Bernard Shaw was one of its main inventors, this whole idea of Fabian socialism, which is the main socialism of the West, that they can be practiced in Congress and Senate and, you know, all, British and Canadian parliaments. And the Labour Party was created in England as an experiment to, and FDR was a Fabian socialist. And so there's definitely this overarching, you know, idea that I would call secular socialism that comes, I think, from Bavaria. And it's kind of a thing what you're
when you say Bavaria, you're referring to Adam Weishaupt and the formation of the secret
Illuminati.
Society, the Illuminati.
Yeah.
In 1770, was it 1776?
Yeah, it was. It was the 18th century. So that whole story, you know, something really came. You got the French Revolution, you got the Bolshevik Revolution, you got the American Republic, which is different because the French Republic was truly to be a secular republic by design. It was not just against the king, but against the Catholic Church. And it came with a heavy ideology of paganism and secularism, which over the centuries we began to realize it has components. Like, for instance, you can only believe in what you see, and you came from monkeys. That's this creation myth and in a world of chance. And science is your guiding principle as these monkeys we catalog and understand the world. And the scientists are also kind of our priests. And life really doesn't really have a meaning, and the state knows best. It's just weird. It's just random ideas kind of over the centuries put together from the Age of Enlightenment. And yeah, this Carl Schwab and the World Economic Forum seem to be crystallizing a lot of these ideas in a more serious implementation.
Right, except now rather than, you know, this is some secret society of individuals in Bavaria, and then later it spread, you know, in different parts of Europe. But really it was, it had considerable influence, but at a certain point, I guess, you know, the monarchs, various countries kind of clamped down and shut it down, or so we thought. Now, with the World Economic Forum, they have, you know, so much influence, and Klaus Schwab, you know, brags about having infiltrated cabinets around the world, including here in Canada, where the Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, is in fact on the board of directors, and I believe also the former governor of the Bank of Canada, Mark Carney. They have world banks, central banks, and huge corporations and investment firms like BlackRock and Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. So they really now have the machine behind them.
Yeah, you don't get things connected like this together without some sort of a spiritual force behind it, because it's not easy to make everything align. But the spirit of it, at least on the surface, seems to be, let's put our minds together. Let's connect civilizations and societies and experts, so to speak, from different parts of the world. And for some strange reason, it's a lot of let's listen to this one man, you know, whose father was a Nazi. It's just a fact. And it's got a bit of a cultish feeling to it. But under his leadership, a space has been created where world leaders, economic leaders, the corporate leaders, political leaders, leaders of all kinds can come together, it seems, not only to share ideas, but to receive what is the enlightened way. And since they are now the enlightened, then they can now claim superiority over the population that doesn't have this enlightenment, this very, you know, advanced and refined view born of all these specialists and their great education. And so it can give itself the right to lead everyone without consent, and to make plans and to lead the society towards those plans. And the fact that our politicians go there, I think the way they see it is a continuation of their university education, that this is smart, that there's a lot of smart people here. I'm going to learn something and I'm going to understand. Because imagine suddenly you are elected to political office, and I imagine sometimes you might run out of ideas, run out of a vision, run out of what is the right way? How do I deal with inflation? Or how do I do this? Or how do I do that? And there's comforting to know that there's an assembly of experts, it seems, in this well-respected, globally attended organization that will guide you into the more enlightened and right way. So it's very naturally infiltrating and creating worldview and direction for all the governments that adhere. And it seems that most governments do adhere to it. So it's very interesting.
Well, and as we'll discuss later in this hour, as to, you know, where is this headed and how does it connect with end times prophecy and, you know, the rise of the 10 kings and ultimately the 11th king. And, you know, we know who that is. So,
right.
And yet if that's what this great reset ultimately is about, you know, leading to the Antichrist and so forth, people might say, but their objectives seem so noble. They want equity. They want fairness. They want what they call this new thing, stakeholder capitalism, so that,
right,
that corporations don't just work for the benefit of the rich and the shareholders. They work for everyone in the community. Who could argue with that?
Yeah. The whole idea of the euphoria, utopia of Marxism, we already know that that doesn't work. We already know that the ideas of Karl Marx, they don't actually manifest, that communism in all of its shapes in the deep East and in Russia were not at all to the service of people. And they took away the sense of creativity, entrepreneurship, human rights, all the things that a free society, you know, uses to build itself. And this is the same. It comes with these promises of leading us. But it's really about control. And once the control is achieved, then it's about brainwashing and letting people think that, you know, they are living in a utopia. Anyone that wants to give us utopia will offer freedom and liberty and will offer creativity and ingenuity, would simply, you know, pressure people to live in a civil way with each other, and to make sure that law and order exists and people's rights are respected and upheld. That system would sound more like something that would bring the culture to these places that you're describing. Usually this way of from the top trying to create an ideal society, I mean, that's what the Iranian Revolution was about, to bring an ideal Islamic society into place, or many of the Marxist and communist or Maoist revolution bring in that kind of an ideal to the people of China. But it brought brutality and death and misery. And it wasn't until China began to open itself up and change that it actually started to evolve from out of that stage. So we know from experience, looking at Marxism in all its forms, that it never leads to those ideals because it doesn't respect certain real qualities about the human condition. And it certainly doesn't take into consideration the frailty of the human condition and the fact that we are fundamentally flawed. And it's really not the systems that are the problem, but in some ways we are. Our passions, our greeds, our fears, who we are in some ways also is something that none of these systems can remedy. So it's a false promise of utopia.
There has been this progression towards this dystopian state that they're offering. They're describing it as utopian, but ultimately we know it's dystopian.
Right.
There is this progression, almost this gradual ratcheting up, and it is spurred along by some type of major cataclysmic event in history. After the Second World War, we had, you know, the introduction of the present monetary system, and then we had, jumping ahead, we had 9/11, which brought in, you know, further, solidification of the national security state and the national surveillance state, and then, of course, COVID, and which brought in, you know, a whole set of regimes and responses and further impetus to, you know, the digital ID for travel and so forth.
I think now
climate change.
Yes, and climate change for sure. So this idea of out of chaos comes order, ad chaos orderum. This idea where you create a chaos and you present yourself a solution. I mean, that's the ABC of conspiracies. It's a very old way of doing things. I think that there is a certain sense of a relaxed approach to partly implementing things into the culture that played itself out and presenting itself as a solution, partly riding what opportunity provides. So you have systems in place, you have a worldview that you're pushing over the course of centuries through the school system, through the university system, and then through the people that come to work in the world in which you now have formed them through that education to be pawns, whether it's journalists, whether it's government employees, whether it's United Nations employees. You're just suddenly in a worldview that in which you have been instructed. There's a way you understand things, and you're inside of a system. You're just a cog that does a function, and now things occur in the world. There are wars. There are economic collapses. There are pandemics, and now you're ready to utilize it. And some of it, of course, you can also cause. It's a combination of opportunity and intent. But you've definitely put the system there to utilize it. And what is the purpose of this system? It is the an ideological form of government that you know, obviously the people who are at the top of this food chain have beliefs. They have religious beliefs, essentially, and they feel compelled that they need to implement them on in the human world. It's as strange as it may seem, that is the conclusion where the breadcrumbs take you once you realize how organized it is, how dedicated they are, and how it unfolds over the course of centuries.
Right. Now, a non-religious person might say, well, this is just the natural progression of human consciousness and human development and human evolution. A religious person, a Christian who believes in the Bible and in end times prophecy and the second coming and so forth, would say that no, these are the machinations of the Antichrist, and he's taking us to this final world kingdom. What do you say to the materialists who say, no, this is just human evolution, this is human consciousness, this is how we evolve as societies?
Well, I mean, there's so many things I could say, like the birth of empire and civilization in Mesopotamia. The writings that we have from the first empire shows that it was something that was handed down to them. It says that, you know, the gods chose these people to become their kings and priests. They gave them advanced knowledge to build giant temples, and then they gave them laws, like the Code of Hammurabi, from the sun god Apollo. And this is the story of all the civilizations, that they received some sort of a code, heavenly code, that began them. This is just history. Now, you can say, well, I don't believe it, somebody just came up with these things, but they're too complex. And the words of these people that changed the world, like the words of Jesus, changed the Roman Empire. The words of Muhammad, or the words of Moses, or the Hindu writings, they all, you know, formed entire civilizations. That's just the facts of history, and they're very complex. Yes, there has always been empires, but empires began, it seems, because of this, some sort of a connection, some sort of a revelation. Before that, human society was organized in patriarchies, in family clans. The whole concept of empire is born, it seems, of the desire to control, coming from, one could argue, who are these beings that seek to implement empire and have a representative. Why would they start this in the south of Mesopotamia? And is this really real, the gods of Rome and the power behind the emperor and what we're talking about today, the idea that there is a hand behind this? What hand would have such a desire, and why would it be doing this? The only thing that makes sense is if the whole story of the Bible is true. If really we humans are in fact part of a much larger story. We were born as part of a world of God and angels, and our history is marked by this interaction. And these empires are not natural empires. They have spiritual forces behind them because we are fundamentally in a spiritual story. Now, if a person might say, well, I don't really buy into all of this, I just think it's humans that do these human things, that's fine. But he is still in that story. He will still see these prophecies come true, as they always do, and he will see that, you know, even God himself will intervene on the stage of history, because these events are not born simply of the natural human world. They are born of a will to control and dominate the human world, and we can't really be rescued from it without this exterior intervention. And I think that's what the UFO phenomenon is about, and I would point to that as well. And I would say, is this not the empirical evidence of this angelic presence and of this larger story that the Bible points to? So I'd say there's archaeology, there's prophecy that is fulfilled, there is evidence of the things of the Bible, and the story makes sense, and history moves in the direction of it. So all of these things are compelling evidence to the reasonable mind.
Ali C. Adatan, Think Again Productions, thinkagainproductions.com. All right, so when we come back, let's talk about if we are headed towards perhaps this, you know, this final empire to be ruled over by the 10 kings and then ultimately the 11th king, where is the scriptural evidence for that? We'll be back, more of our discussion in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
Corporations, governments, and sometimes entire civilizations. What goes up must come down. And it lands on The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. The world is being pulled over your eyes. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio. To reach Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free at 1-866-740-4740.
We're back with Ali Siadatan from Think Again Productions, documentary filmmaker. We're talking about The Great Reset, the WEEF, and how that connects with End Times Prophecy. So, we often talk about the Book of Daniel when we're talking about the end times. Does Daniel differ from the other prophets in terms of sort of laying out what's ahead of us?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't differ to lay what's ahead of us, but it has a very significant difference, especially clear in the Hebrew canon. So in the Hebrew canon of the Old Testament, all the prophets are in one section called Nevi'im, which is with the historical books, because God says and God does on the stage of history. So they're put together. And the first five books of the book is Moses, Torah, and then there is the historical and prophetic books. This is called Nevi'im. And then there's the third section called Writings, Ketuvim, which is has things like wisdom literature, like the Proverbs of Solomon, the Psalms of David, the Book of Lamentation, Esther, these scrolls that stand out, Ruth, and also the prophetic book of Daniel, the only prophetic book that's not with the other prophecies, or with the other books of prophets. Why? Because the other books, all of them, it came to my attention, seem to tell about the future history of Israel. And they paint a positive picture of the future, at redemption, God's intervention, the earth returning to the Garden of Eden, and an age of peace being ushered in by the Messiah of Israel. And so it's a very positive picture that the prophets of Israel paint. There is a moment of conflict that corresponds to the transition between the age of empire and this utopia of God. But that's mentioned, you know, here and there briefly. But the focus is on the redemption and restoration of Israel and of the planet. The book of Daniel is very different. The book of Daniel is the only book that doesn't tell the story of Israel. It tells the story of the Gentile empires. It's distinct in that. And it's written, only the first and last chapter are written in Hebrew. The whole book is written in Aramaic, which was the international language of politics at the time of Daniel, the language of empire. So it's the book of the empires of the Gentiles is written to them in this language of their, you know, international relations at the time of Daniel, and delivered in that sense to the king of Babylon, who is the first person who really receives the message. And his vision, his dream that Daniel interprets for him, has in it all that the book of Daniel is ever going to talk about. Those empires. It's as though the rest of the book of Daniel is a horizontal version of the vertical statue of this, of the beginning of the book. And so he goes through it. And so it's different in that sense. It tells the story of empire and the empire of Gentiles instead of the story of Israel. And so it takes us into this final world empire, because it tells us something very important about God. It says he changes times and seasons, he removes kings and installs kings. So it attributes the rise and fall of empires and the coming and going of kings to the will of God. God is the king of kings. God is deciding even the Gentile empires of history will be decided by God's timing and will be under God's authority. And then it proceeds to point out four empires to us. Of all the different, you know, kingdoms and powers that have existed in history, it suddenly pulls four out of the pages of history out for us. The Babylonian one of Nebuchadnezzar the king, the Medo-Persians, the Greek, and the Romans. And what happens to Rome is that Rome scatters into many small heads. When it attacks Jerusalem and destroys the temple in the ninth of the month of Av, which is coming up, and which is interesting that the Romans and the Babylonians, centuries apart, destroyed the temple on the same day of the Hebrew calendar. All of the, you know, these events turned and turned to make history. Coincidence, people say, but yet, is it coincidence? So this is always, there's always this evidence of, you know, design in the movement of history. And it seems that in return, God, you know, responded by sending his spirit to the Roman Empire and changed the Roman Empire in that way, and also scattered and broke the Roman Empire into pieces the way that the Roman Empire scattered the Jewish people and broke the temple into pieces. Because God had said that he would bless those who bless Abraham and curse those who curse Abraham. So the reverse occurred, and then it scattered. But it always maintained the symbol of the eagle, which was a symbol of Zeus, of Jupiter, its god. It always kept that symbol in all its flags. And so the Western Rome, you know, this, the, divided into all of these, the Holy Rome, Roman Empire of Charlemagne, the Portuguese, the Spanish, Napoleon, the British, reaching out from the isle and having all these heads, you know, in, but the symbol of the eagle carries on. Even the German Nazis used it. And in the East, when Constantinopolis, the center of Eastern Rome, fell to the Ottomans in 1453, the prince escaped to Moscow, and the leaders of Russia said that they will take on the burden of Rome, and they will be the third Rome. That's what they called themselves. And they will, you know, be the heralds of Rome and of Christianity. And so they took the name Tsar at that point, which means Caesar in Slavic, the way that German says Kaiser. And they took the double-headed eagle of Byzantium, of Constantinopolis, as their symbol, which is still on their shields. So all the way from Moscow through the European capitals into D.C., we see that Rome flourished and continued. And the Renaissance, you know, brought all the knowledge of antiquity forward. Even the Senate, even the architecture of the Capitol is on purpose designed around a Roman temple, according to Thomas Jefferson's desires, who happened to also be a Mason. And that's why he chose that July 4th, you know, the very middle of the year, you know, the day of illumination. And so he may have also been a Christian, like that. He may have had many different ideas go through his head. So the Rome continues and continues to rule. The Fourth Empire never stops ruling. But it gets divided into all of these heads. And so now that Jerusalem is reunited under Jewish rule since 1967, now that we have come to the end of history and the time of the judgment of the empires, God may allow Rome to unite again. And this is what the coalition of the Ten Kings may be about. The final, the reemergence of the Roman Empire. And that's what really Bible prophecy points to, that there will be a final empire that will contend with God himself. But it really, it's in the days of this empire that God will usher in his own kingdom. This is what, you know, the book of Daniel, the book of Revelation really point. And the reason you kind of see how the book of Daniel may be relevant to this conversation is because it tells the story of the age of empire. And so it really sheds a lot of light on the parts of the book of Revelation that are also meditating in the language of symbols, like the dream of the king Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 2, which was in the language of symbols. God spoke about the age of empire. In the book of Revelation 2, God speaks in the language of symbols about empire, but he gives us more clues about the things that Daniel spoke about.
So why would God allow this to happen? I mean, this particular, if we're heading towards this, you know, final empire, this one is, again, I would say highlighted by, you know, a loss of sovereignty, individual freedom, a loss of rights, even we've got the transhumanist movement that's also involved. It seems to be wrapped up in all of this. Why is God allowing all of these dystopian things to befall mankind? We just have about a minute and a half here, and then we'll pick this up on in the next segment. But let's begin the discussion.
I think these are the birth pangs of a new age of history, and humanity is forged and formed by how it relates to God. Each individual is formed by their relationship to God, and humanity as a whole is forged by its relationship to God. for the destiny that awaits it, because the earth is the birthplace of the immortal sons of God who have a role to play in the future of the cosmos. And these are the mechanisms of the training, of the forming, and of the birth of these characters. But it's safe because God is in control and sits on the throne. It's all really tightly in his hands. He sets the limits of things. It is safe. So I would say it is the school of good and evil. It is the place of birth of an entire race that has a destiny. And this is the struggle that shapes it, that forms it, that informs it, that tests it. And it's done in a kind of a safe playground.
Well, interesting. Safe. Although, I mean, it's going to be a rough ride.
Yes, that's for sure.
Ali Siadatan, Think Again Productions, UFOs, Angels, and Gods is the documentary. What else is going on the website?
Well, people can, if they're interested, I'm doing an audio series on the Book of Revelation in my Patreon page, patreon.com/thinkagainproductions. And, you know, you can kind of sign up for that and just listen to the chapter-by-chapter study. I'm really enjoying creating it and researching it. It's fascinating. And there's a lot that we can understand. And I think that to your question, you know, it's a rough ride. I think that God equips his people and fortifies his people spiritually inside. And also, I think this knowledge is comforting to understand that as you go through it, you realize, I see. So there's this empire, there's this, you know, world leader, and it's going to get very crazy if what the Bible says is going to happen. It's going to be demonic. It's going to be fallen angels are going to come out of the ground. It's going to be something that we haven't seen since the days of Noah. But apparently, you know, Noah went through the flood. The friends of Daniel stood in a burning furnace and survived. And there are many such tales of God, his power being in the midst of people's sufferings, comforting people spiritually through supernatural edification and power from within, and also informing their worldview in a way that sees the events in a different way. Like Joseph said to his brothers, you intended it for evil, but God for good. I know they put him through hell, but yet he came out as the Pharaoh of Egypt, or as the second in command, and saved the world from famine. In the book of Job, which is a study of human suffering, we see that God is in complete control and places the limits of what Satan can do to Job. So God is in control of this empire, of these fallen angels, of their chosen leader. God is setting limits, like in the book of Job. God doesn't give Job more than he can take. So I assume that's true for each one of us. And in the midst of his suffering, he receives great visions and revelations. And finally, as he goes through the ordeal, and it seems safely and successfully, he comes out far more blessed at the other end than the life he had before, which was already very blessed. So these things tell us that yes, it's a rough ride, but God is in charge.
Okay, but we're hearing rumblings about massive disruptions to the food supply, which have already begun, possible food shortages, in some of the more darker scenarios. We're hearing about things like, you know, internment camps for the non-compliant. We're hearing about, you know, social credit scores so that all of every purchase you make will have to be sort of approved.
Horrible. I think that they're going to have a much harder time. That's why, to your point, that there's crises needed. And the environment is really being pumped up as a big next one. It has to be global. It has to be big. It has to be scary. And we have to want to comply because this is how we feel safe. So I think that it's not as easy to implement all of these ideas. I think that we're seeing where they want to take it. I think that we have a say. I think we can fight back. I think there is people who talk about it openly and those who don't, but they agree that, okay, I don't really want this. And so I don't think it's as easy because there's two sides to the story and we have a will and they have to control humans. I mean, I have a hard time controlling my dog sometimes when I go for a walk or my kids. Like, it's not so easy to just control humans. So I think that we have a fight to fight.
Well, we
can mitigate these things.
Okay, we're heading into a break, but when we come back, I mean, yeah, if, as you say, sometimes God uses these things, Satan uses them for evil, God uses them for good, are these things that are coming, I mean, do we fight back, or do we just accept them as part of God's plan? I mean, isn't...
Well, what do you want to be the testimony of our generation? That we fought back, or at least even pointed to it in the context of the prophetic word, or that we just said nothing and no reflection on it and no action on it. Obviously, we want to reflect on it in the context of prophecy, and we want to act because things happen through action. I think that's all okay. What I think the Bible prophecies point to, this nightmarish a scenario.
A few minutes remain with Ali Siadatan, thinkagainproductions.com. So when we look at the Great Reset and all of these disruptions to the food supply, war in Ukraine, rampant inflation, where is this all headed?
As far as the world system is concerned, is an economic collapse perhaps, because in order to create a new system, you have to collapse the old one. So I think that moving to 2030, that's the 100th year anniversary of the Great Depression. And there is a cycle, an economic cycle, a very important one, that is measured in 75 to 100 year cycles. It's called the long-term debt cycle. And if it does come to its apex in 2029, then we will enter into a Great Depression once again. And that really is the kind of economic world out of which fascism rises, that people look for strong leaders to rescue them. And so I think that's when we might see the rise of the 10 kings in the 30s. And if there is a war between, let's say, this Iran, the Islamic Republic, you know, and its desire to attack Israel, and now this connection with Russia that may be, you know, this idea of humiliating Russia or secluding it, or this can backfire. You know, you can make a man angry to the point where he wants to do more. And he might press, you know, suddenly be haunted by the spirit that wishes to press against Jerusalem, because there is a prophecy of a war never happened that involves Iran and other countries mentioned. Some believe Russia is involved in that. So if these things happen in the late 20s and there's economic weakness, then yes, we could see that in the 2030s, kind of like the 1930s, the rise of fascism, and then out of that fascism, a new Führer, you know, coming out. So these are kind of the next things we should look for: the rise of a coalition of 10 nations of kings, Israel signing a treaty with the nations of the world, and with her Islamic neighbors. Possibly, you know, wars of huge magnitude that involve the destruction of the Sea of Damascus, and, you know, God forbid, of course, I don't want any city to be destroyed, but I'm just repeating the things that the prophetic picture paints, and a great regional war that I think might usher in the need for a world leader and the need for world peace and the need for an agreement with Israel. So these are some of the things we should look for, and yet have a fluid mind as God continues to educate us as we go forward. But definitely the big landmark on the world stage is the rise of this final world leader, the famous Antichrist. And yes, the Bible says a tremendous, huge amount of stuff about this guy. And he is a cult leader, and he is you know, demonically hooked up, and he is going to try to deceive the whole world and even rally the world against God. It's all real. I mean, it's incredible. And that's why I think the UFO phenomenon is so compelling, because it could be kind of the evidence of this angelic dimension to our tale. Israel has returned. Jerusalem is again part of the Jewish Commonwealth. The angels of God and of the enemy are aligning over our heads. The empires of the world are regathering. The eagles are reuniting. And if you know, Russia has hooked, let's say, into Iran, America, into the Sunni world, these more modern empires of Greece and Rome seems to hook into the old Persian Empire and Mesopotamian Empire and the Egyptian Empire and kind of form a whole, as though the whole statue comes together under the rule of 10 leaders. And that will hold back the kings of the East, like, you know, India and China. And China is having massive economic problems right now. It's credit system is on the verge of collapse because of the real estate that's collapsing there. It's in a deleveraging cycle, which is like the Great Depression. And it's basically, they call it the lost decade. China has just entered into the lost decade in its economic cycle. It's out for a while. So the West has time to kind of build. And if this coalition does come together because of the future rise of China, and Russia may come back into the fold and join the other eagles and connect to the older empires of Persia and Mesopotamia. And if all of that forms a whole, then definitely it'll be much stronger than anything come from the East. I think the forming of this empire of the Ten Kings is the next thing on the stage of history. Perhaps the Magog invasion of Ezekiel 38-39, we'll see if that happens by the end of this decade with the rise of Iran and Russia and their allies in the Islamic world. And what you're saying, you know, this whole idea of the jihad against Israel that we're witnessing right now with all the missiles, if this, you know, comes to a final head, that's another thing we should be looking for. Ultimately, spiritual awakening within the Jewish people will continue, and also among all people. I mean, the return of Israel has been a blessing to everyone as the land has come back to life. So the people that believe in Christ all around the world have come into massive new revelation. In the past, you know, 70 years, our understanding of the Bible continues to get revolutionized like never before. And it really seems to be, there's an echo of the blessing that has returned to this land and to the fulfillment of prophecies happening before our eyes. And those who are grafted in the spiritual family, the spiritual children of Abraham, are also being suddenly rejuvenated. And I think this is preparing us. One of the symbols of the age of Antiochus Epiphanes is the candlestick, the menorah, you know, and it's the Hanukkah season. And so it's when does the light shine strongest? When the darkness rises, the light becomes all the brighter. So I think it's kind of preparing us. So there's a spiritual birth happening around the world as people study these things and they're called by God. And I mean, the whole Muslim world is going through a huge spiritual revival of people coming to know Jesus. China, massive revival. Africa, we've seen that for quite some time. So there's really this harvest that's rising, and perhaps their evil will even be again a harvest from the West. So I'm seeing a time of spiritual revival, and yet the forming of fake world religion. I'm seeing the time that leads us to a utopia, and yet the rise and judgment of evil empire and something dark that needs to be cleansed coming to the surface and then being removed. And so I think this is the kinds of times we're living in, and we're perfectly designed for it. And God will lead us through it. We can just, in that sense, take a deep breath. I'm not saying it will be comfortable, like you were saying, but maybe we have grown very soft in our cushy, you know.
That's so true. Well, it's comforting to hear you say that we are designed for this. We're about to have our mettle tested like never before. There's another expression, you know, God will either lighten your load or strengthen your back. So,
right. No, that's true. He does support us from inside. This really is a time where people want to come to know God and to make that connection for themselves in their private lives, so that they can have the strength, the light, the truth, the way, the benefits, the blessing that comes from knowing Jesus and knowing him as the king of your life. He's a real character of history. And what the book of Daniel reveals about him, and I'll just read this prophecy that Daniel saw, that the son of man, he says, I was watching in the night visions, behold, one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was brought into his presence. Dominion, glory, and sovereignty were given to him, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will never pass away, and his kingdom is one that will not be destroyed. Jesus ascended into a white cloud and left the earth to fulfill this prophecy of Daniel's, this vision he had 500 years before. And this is the reality of our planet. He is the king. He has received the throne over Israel and over all the nations, and he's returning with an army to the earth to rid us of all of this thing that we're seeing in the UFO phenomenon, the empires and the dark societies and their leaders and their weird plan to rule, to control, to brainwash, to implement their own religion and science and to compete with God's plans for the human race. He's coming to remove all of these things, and we need that intervention. So making that connection, pledging that allegiance, I think is key to everyone's peace and security in their own personal lives and for the lives of their family. It's a real story, and we're in it.
Ali Siadatan, thinkagainproductions.com and patreon.com/thinkagainproductions. Ali, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
All right, my thanks to Carlos Cagina and Ryan White. Back next week with a brand new program. Hope you'll be along for that one. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed and nothing hidden that won't be made known. What you hear in the dark, speak in the light. What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite, I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.